Welcome back, everybody. It is our second hour of class two of Celebrate Your Body's Infinite Wisdom with T-Touch for You. And where are we going next, Linda?
So where we're going next is to Germany, because one, Anka, are you still with us? I hope.
I am here.
Good. What is really interesting with that, where we want to put our emphasis next is, actually, before I go there, Sandy, wait, we're not quite finished with this. Let us finish. Let us continue with this process. Sorry, Anka. Anka has a story that is, I want to bring in about the use of T-Touch. And how it was really important in an important situation. But I'm sorry, Sandy, we didn't finish with Ibis. I want to know how you are feeling at this point. What's the connection? Where can we take this? Because this concept of end of life, man, it's happening to a lot of people, not in the usual ages. And what can we do about this? We have a beautiful sharing later. Sorry, we have a really beautiful sharing later from Eleanor with her mom that is very thrilling. But we're not finished, Sandy. We just got started with this.
Well, it's... I keep coming back to what's my choice, because like yesterday, for instance, I was feeling sad and wistful, and I was thinking about certain things about Ibis, and I started to cry. I was driving and I could feel myself go down a spiral that's very old and very familiar. And I was on my way to the ocean, and I was part of what triggered is I hadn't been back to the ocean since the night before he died, but I had been there the night before he died. And so I was like, ooh. And I just, as I was sitting with these crashing waves and, you know, feeling the energy from the ocean, he reminded me that he hasn't gone anywhere. And that it was my thinking that I was missing him, that was creating where I was headed, and not the reality of my actual connection. And that's what he's been practicing with me, in a sense, basically for asking me to understand and to be with an experience for the last 32 years, literally. And it's through the animals, my animals have passed, which are many, and people, that they have shown me that I'm not actually alone, because I would always feel that massive sense of separation and disconnection, because I didn't know and I couldn't understand growing up about the connection. And so that's an ongoing gift. And last night I painted this.
Beautiful.
So, wow. So that's my Ibis as Pegasus. It's a work in progress because I haven't painted him in yet.
Oh, this is gorgeous. I love the electricity of the tail.
I know. And it's the painting, like I use painting as a way to connect. I use the colors and the shapes. Like I never used to be able to draw a horse or anything in a way that felt good to me growing up, because I used to try all the time until I started connecting in this way with consciousness and energy, with them as the connection. And I connected literally with them and communicated with the energy. And so then I let in the colors and the movement and the shapes come through me instead of me trying to find the shape. It's coming from a different part of my brain and being.
So beautiful. And getting back to this, what we had this long discussion because oh my gosh, I mean, look at historically when somebody died, when you lost somebody.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. I mean, that was like, you know, if you lost a spouse, you were, I mean, the women were nobody. And we have that in every cell in our body. One of the amazing, phenomenal past life regressions I did was going into my body with Chris Griscom. I did this, I went into my body and I saw that in every cell in our body, we are holding all of the emotions, all of the negative emotions of every being who ever walked this planet. That's just part of our makeup. And we can choose to know, wait a minute, but I have a choice. And when we, instead of just thinking, these cells, you know, programmed with all of this emotional experiences of people, we can choose another experience and remember who we are. And what I got from this journey that we did today into the forest was this basic concept that I got from Sir Charles Sherrington, you know, 1976, remember your perfection at the cellular level. And it's really remember your connection, which I'm going to, I mean, that's always a part for me, but I like to acknowledge Ibis and his connection to this Pegasus, because that's a whole other thing, this our connection to the universe and this star nation, you all, it's time that we remembered who we are, where we come from, yeah? And that divine within.
And I used to be really, I just want to say that I used to be very scared of that. Like if somebody started to talk about connection to the stars in these ways in intergalactic, I actually had an adverse reaction. And I just want to say that it's, for me personally, it's been a very gradual opening. And it's so ironic because the very thing that we crave the most is that contact and connection is the thing that I know for me that it's also the scariest, you know, and I've had the hardest time doing. So like, you know, like just staying in my heart to be in contact with someone while I'm in grief, that vulnerable opening used to feel like way too much for me. And I keep coming back to, Eleanor, what your mom said to you in the car yesterday or the day before about how will I know that you're with me, or how do I connect with you? How do I hear you? And I would love to hear from you. One of the things that stands out to me that she says is you'll know it. What did she say, in her nerves, or you'll know it in your nervous system?
And Eleanor, before you say that, I want to tell you what I'm getting. It's so beautiful. Oof. I reached back through so many generations, so many eons across the planet when women were left alone, and what happened to them, and I'm able to feel this in my body and to send love, and send them the reminder. Yeah, it's just one part of the path. And really, really send that compassion and love and feel it. Bring it into my own body. Bring all of those women and men. It's not just women, but, you know, we're in the women body. Men have the same many, 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 I know, of the loss. And so to be able to feel that and bring it in to the divine plan. There's only now, in this moment. Time. There's no time. It's all now. And this is something that has served me. I woke up, you know, one of the things in the middle of the night that came to me was one of the sentences that has served me through some very devastating times when my husband was sleeping with other women. And I read one sentence by Ouspensky that it's necessary to go through the crystallization of fire in order to hone the soul. Now, this is true until we remember our connection to the divine and who we really are, that one with all. And then we can recognize that's in the human body, that is true. It doesn't have to be. We can keep the compassion for all those lifetimes we've gone through and all that others have gone through, and bring it to this state of choice, of gratitude. So this experience we've been going through with Eleanor, with her mom, because her mom preparing to go, it's been a big thing in the family. And we know all of us, you know, who are here, some of you have daughters, some have newborns. How can we support them in remembering their connection to us and that we'll always be there? That feeling of aloneness, Sandy, that you have, that, you know, so many have feeling, it's so easy to fall in there. And it's also very possible to make the shift and change, transform to that memory of, wait a minute, we are connected with all that is. And yes, all that is. So,
Linda, would you like me to share that video that when I was just sitting in the parking lot with my mom asking her about, yes, how do I connect with her? Because like Sandy's saying, I was afraid, what do I do when I'm having those moments of loneliness for her? And she gave me the response. Let me find it. I know, Sandy, that's what I texted to you, right? I texted you that video.
Tell everybody while you're pulling that up, what's going on with your mom.
Okay, so my mom has been, God bless her soul, has been preparing me for the last year that she will pass on. And she's, you know, a year and a half ago, she said, you know, my time is starting to come. It'll be about a year, 2 years at the most. And I was listening, and she says, now is our time that we are making our memories together. And in these memories, you will have these to think about when I'm not here anymore. And so my mother is a very learned woman and a very wise woman. And she, in the era in which women were not allowed to be rabbis, so she has her master's degree in religious studies, global religious studies. And so all the rabbis in Los Angeles, most of them back in the time, were my mother's rabbinical students, but women weren't allowed to be rabbis, even though my mother came from a very high line of rabbis. So she was the rabbinical teacher. So often I will ask her very deep questions, and the answers are awe-inspiring, you know, about questions about, can you tell me about the Torah? And she goes, ugh, it's not about the Torah. It's simply God gave us 10 commandments. And I'm like, well, what's the deal with that? Those are the 10 things you should never do. Like what? You shall not have somebody else's wife. You shall not take their food. You shall not steal from them. It gives you the list. I go, well, why doesn't it tell you what to do? She says, because mankind, God gave you choice. God gave you the thinking capability of everything else, create from there. So I'm just telling you, don't do these 10 things, but everything else, you create your lives as to what to do and how to be with each other, because mankind needs some rules, because without rules, we immediately steal and lie. And so it's interesting that just given what don't do, the rest you and your culture, you and your humanity create what to do. So I'm going to share with you, because I don't want to take too much time from this.
You do. This is really, really valuable.
I'll get back to you.
Okay, thank you. So she guides us well as to how we touch in on our humanity and what it is about loving others. That it's not about a look of somebody's body, but it's about loving, listening, and understanding. And this is amazing, because this is coming from a woman who was made deaf in childhood from a reaction to an antibiotic. So she only has like 1% in one ear and 2% in the other ear, but she reads lips exquisitely well. So she hears everything you say, but she hears vibrational frequencies that animals hear that we don't hear. So she's in touch since childhood. And so she's preparing me, because we are like best friends. She was in the Feldenkrais family. I studied the Feldenkrais method. We're both practitioners. We both went to trainings and workshops always together. We traveled the world together doing these things that most mothers and daughters didn't do together. We had this thing so deeply in common. And when I connected with Linda, my mother said, this is the woman you will be connected to forever. The first year I connected with Linda when I was age 19. It was with my mother's blessing and my father standing next to her going, whatever she says, yes. You know, so seriously, he really meant it in that way. And so she knows it would be extra hard on me when she goes. And so Linda asked me to ask her questions like, what would you like me to continue on when you pass away? And so I've been taking copious notes when I ask her these questions, because Linda, I love it. She answered, oh, it's not me to tell you. You find your own way, because I think I did a good job up until now. You can think on your own. Really, you create. You have enough in your background that you create the possibilities. And I thought that was beautiful. It's not. She says, it's not me to tell you what to do. So isn't that beautiful?
It's really beautiful. And what came to me as we were discussing this for you all is those of you who are moms, this is an opportunity to create those memories and those moments. We did this with my sisters and my mother. My dad did it with his sons, three sons. Create these moments. I have these precious moments over the time where you take the time and you go with one child, or you create these memories, and they're so precious. They're so precious. They stay with us forever, you know? And so this, the words of wisdom that come from Eleanor's mother are really seeds of truth.
So let me share this, because it made my day. So let's see. Oh, shoot. Hold on one sec. I'm going to find share. Here we go. My mother is 92 years old. She's very hard of hearing. Oops. Hold on. Let's see if I can get this. We're just sitting in the Costco parking lot. When I asked her this question about how will I connect with you when you're not here?
Empathy means that the person remembers things, tell you the story of his life. How did he feel when you came here? What would he You said to me that when you're not here, that I can still talk to you.
And you can tell me what you feel.
How will I know that you can hear me?
I can feel. You repeat the same thing.
Can you say what she's saying, Eleanor?
Yes. First of all, my mother has a lot of short-term memory issues with age, but she's saying that you can, let me go back. She said what? You can feel me. Yeah. Hold on. I'll repeat it because I know it may be hard for people to understand. So I'll pause and repeat what she said.
I still remember what my mom told me.
That's beautiful. Can you tell me more what I can do?
Oops, let me go back.
But you said to me that when you're not here, that I can still talk to you.
And you can tell me what you feel.
How will I know that you can hear me?
I can feel you. You repeat the same thing.
I still remember what my mom told me.
That's beautiful.
I don't know if they understood that. I still remember what my mom told me is what she said.
Or what I can do when you're not here. How can I be with you?
You go out for a walk like that.
And then what?
And you can concentrate. Not for a long time. What was the feeling of
heaven? How will I know that?
You don't have to worry about that. That's not what you want. How do you know? You want to be part of things. I remember what Baruch used to tell me.
You have to repeat, Eleanor, because we can't understand well enough.
So she's starting to say, I remember what Baruch used to say. Baruch was Moshe's Feldenkrais's brother, and Shendel was Moshe Feldenkrais's mother, and my mother was raised by Moshe's parents. She was not raised very much by her mother because families got separated. So Moshe's mother took my mother under her wing and raised her in a very spiritual and very spiritual home.
Shendel
is Moshe's mother.
I can see her face.
Yeah.
Hanechka.
The what?
Hanechka. That's the Russian version for Hana. My mother's name is Hana. She stopped.
It's a part of your blood. It's a part of your nerves, correct?
Inside of your blood is a part of your nerves. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
So in the future, when you're not here, we can still be together?
Yes. And you will do things like that. And now I'm picking you up and we are going.
So she's saying, and the way I'll do it is I'll say, and Mom, now I'm picking you up and we're going to a cafe and we're going to sit and talk. And when we sit in the cafe, I will be here with you and you can talk to me. Because that's the thing we've done since childhood. That was our thing. We would just always sit in an outdoor cafe.
It's like that in a cafe. I will feel it.
What will I feel?
I'm sitting.
That you're sitting with me.
I talk to bed.
Yeah.
And I'm talking how much you miss that you don't see your kids in the presence.
And what does he say to you?
But we can't understand what she said, Eleanor.
She's saying, you know, I talk to Dad. And I tell him how much he missed everyone's birthdays, meaning celebrations. And I asked, what did he say to you?
But I told
him. She said, he didn't say anything to me, but I talked to him.
What's that?
He was sad.
Will you be sad when you're not here?
I'll be sad that that was sad because I early.
So she's saying, I won't be sad. She changed it. I won't be sad. Dad was sad because he died too early.
Yeah.
He didn't die because he was old.
Okay. And how do you feel that that's different for you?
That I'm not disappear.
That I won't disappear. I'll be here.
That's what I feel.
Wow. That's what I feel.
You feel that you won't disappear even though you're gone.
I feel like you.
Tell me.
I feel ashamed. And I fell when I was in Baranovich. And I fell.
Baranovich was in Russia.
What do you have in your memories? Nothing?
No, everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. So
it's part of your genetics.
So I have a question.
In other words, everything you remember is all in your genes. You just have to remember.
When you're not here, I won't be so lonely without you.
So the phone rang and I lost the connection, but this is what she said. Let me stop sharing. Oy, oy, oy. How do I go out of this? There. Hold on. Stop sharing. Okay. What she said in the next video clip, which was like only 35 seconds, is all you need to do is walk outside, put your feet on the ground, and look in the trees, because the trees will always tell you the stories and talk to you. And the birds will talk to you. The blackbirds, I don't know, I don't trust them so much. And I'm like, I love the blackbirds. What are you talking about? But you have to keep in mind, from their old world and old culture, the blackbirds carry a stigma, which, of course, I love them because I thought they were extra smart. But she said, you just go in the nature for 20 minutes a day with your feet on the ground, and you will feel the energy in the breeze. And that is where I am. And I am in the trees. That is where I am. And I am in the birds that are singing. That is where I am. I will be here always, because that's what we do. We don't go away.
And this is so beautiful. Thank you so much, Eleanor. And years ago, one of the reasons that it's so poignant at the moment, there's a new syndrome being recognized in the medical world. It's called nature deficit disorder. And we don't get enough with nature. It's a class that we're taking with we have doctors who are subscribing and teach us twice a week with plant-based eating and positive thinking and this concept of creating some opportunity, even if you're inside, Sandy and I were talking about this the other day, like you can get these wall hangings and create a scene where you walk, you have it there. I have a painting with flowers, something that creates the nature around you. And it's so important. And years ago, I led a group of children for a Nozomi school, for Chris Griscom school, in for a week with To Touch with wolf dogs, like 17, 18 wolf dogs. And what was one of the things I did, I took the children out into the woods and we did the flowering tree ceremony, which I'd like to do this with you the next time. Some of you have done it in the last course we did, but I've done it many times. And you sit with the back of the tree and you ask these four questions. And one of the young men who, you know, 15-year-old, who was one of the, assistants for the younger kids for us for the week, went out and he stayed a long time. Most of the kids only had 30 minutes with the tree. And it took him about 45 minutes to come back. And what he said is that his dad had died of a heart attack with no warning, and he was gone, and he missed him very much. And the tree told him, when he sat with the tree, his dad came to him and said, anytime you wish to connect with me, just sit with the tree and I will be there. And this concept of bringing us into nature, and what your mom said, I mean, this is just walk in nature, however that is. And the fact that we have our animals, we have many animals sitting around here with us. Most of them are at the moment out of view, but they are our connectors also when we don't have an opportunity to get out. They connect us to nature in special ways. And I see, Ruby, I see out your window, you have a beautiful view of the trees, don't you? I love it. So I would really like to just hear some feedback, what you're feeling from this, what you would like to share. When we talked with Sandy and we had that 3 hours with Ebus, and then I've had this ongoing conversation with Eleanor and her mom, that we talk to our kids. We talk to them, because so many families don't dare to talk about leaving. They die without ever acknowledging that they're going to die. And how do we open these conversations? So we start when they're, you know, wherever we can. I was so blessed that my parents both had no fear of that. They were looking forward to meeting up with their friends and, you know, going onward. But that's not true of many people. And we have this opportunity to look at that transition in a new way and to create new memories, create new possibilities for that transition. And with each one of us, when we look at the fears of being alone or of that fear of what's on the other side, there's much, much help for that. And I would just love to hear from any of you. What started me on this many years ago, it's been at least 30 years, is a book, Raise Your Hand If You Know the Book by Dr. Raymond Moody, Life After Life. He was the first doctor who showed, you know, the fact that even though people were legally dead, they still had this same memory. And then Dr. Eben Alexander, he was this big surgeon, and he just really knocked Dr. Moody down and said, this is just a chemical response, and, you know, this is not true, da da da. And then, how many of you read his book? I can't remember the name, but it's Eben Alexander. And he was legally dead for like 2 weeks, and the only reason they kept him on support is because of his status. And he came back from completely brain dead to have this experience from the other side. Can somebody come up with the name of the book? It's a fabulous book. It's been out there at least 10 years. And these are things that, you know, we have these resources that show proof of it from the most skeptical. I love those two experiences. So if you actually, Shan, maybe you can just go on Amazon and see I think it's EBA and Alexander, Dr. something about heaven, something with heaven. But those are important opportunities to have this discussion, because I can't tell you how many people I know who they're at the deathbed and there's no goodbye. There's no acknowledgement that it's the next level. We can help you on your way. We can support you. That's what hospice is so beautifully here for us. We can help you. Ruby, I see your hand.
I would love to share with you all the last few moments with my dad. My dad was this will characterize him. He was in hospice at home, and my mom and I thought we could take care of him. And they came out to evaluate, and this lovely young nurse sits on his bed and says to him, Sam, do you know why I'm here? And he said, no. And she said, you're dying. And he looked at her like she was absolutely out of her mind, crazy. And she said to him, what are you holding on for? Your body is tired, it's failing. What are you holding on for? And this will just describe my dad, and then I'll tell you the conversation I had. He said, well, I have a CD due at the bank on Monday. And my mom and I were like, oh my gosh. I said, Dad, we can take care of that. Well, you don't know what I want to do with it. I said, well, you can let me know. So when the nurse left, when the hospice lady left and my mom walked her to the door, I've always wanted to have this conversation with him, but he didn't have any belief of anything would happen after he died. So I said to him, hey, Dad, and he was a jokester as well. And he said, well, I guess it's true. I said, what's that? And he said, here today and gone tomorrow. After I got him to like stop hiding behind the joke and really have a good conversation, I said, will you do me a favor? And he said, well, what's that? And I would never have been able to bring this up before. He would have thought I was nuts. And I said, will you contact me when you get wherever you're going?
Oh.
And he said to me, and this is why I knew, I knew that he had humbled himself. At, you know, he said, well, I don't know how to do that. And I said, oh, but you will know. And he said, okay. And that, when they took him into hospice, I wanted to stay with him. And my brother and my sister got there in time to squeeze his hand before he was no longer responsive. And the nurse said, no, you need to go home. I said, no, I don't want him to be alone. She goes, no, you need to go home. They know so much about death. It's amazing. I'm just so in, you know, gratitude to hospice. So I went home and I had a girlfriend staying with me and she said, I heard a bird outside my window that I'd never heard before. And I said, what is that? And she said, that's a whippoorwill. And I burst into tears. I said, Dad is on Whippoorwill Lane. And within one moment, the phone rang and said, your father has passed. And she said, the reason I wanted you to leave is he would not have passed with you there. He did not want to show that to anyone. That was, and so for 2 weeks in a row, this whippoorwill, which is a night bird, came outside my window and chirped louder and louder and louder. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. So I played a little bit of the devil's advocate because I'm still playing around with really trusting my connections. And I said, I was going to the Himalayas to trek around for a month. And I said, okay, thank you so much. Will you do me a favor and contact me when we're not in, you know, right here? I have to tell you, whippoorwills have never been seen in Nepal. And the first day and the last day of our trek, the guide and the five of us heard the whippoorwill. So I think he found a way with that. And it just, what a beautiful, it's just so special to be able to have that.
Ruby, Amy asks, when was this?
It was 6 years ago in February. This coming February, it'll be 6 years. Every now and then the whippoorwill will come back, but not that often.
Well, and there's another little book that I highly recommend. It's called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Yeah. And I've read many books, but this has a different take. I came here to Hawaii. The reason I'm with Roland, I came to do a 6-day course in soul retrieval from the Robert Monroe Institute and taking souls to the garden and crossing over. And this concept is clearer in this book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. And it's Billy Fingers is actually the brother of the author of this. And he was a bad boy brother, sort of, you know, into alcohol and not particularly close. And he started coming to her after he died in the crash. And it's a really beautiful book. And I had years ago, one of our practitioners lost her 6-year-old Rottweiler. And she was really feeling guilty because she was out looking after every other dog. Her dog had a liver problem and she felt really guilty because, you know, that she hadn't looked after him. She looked after everybody else's dog. This is over 20 years ago. And so I said, please, and they had buried him out in the backyard. And I said, just go out with a piece of paper, you know, something nice to write with, and sit down and just ask for a sign that he forgives you, because they always do. And it was a day in July, and she went out and sat there beside the little grave that they'd made. And on the top of the grave, straight out of the sky, for, I don't know, short time, maybe 30 seconds, I don't know how long, snow fell on the grave. And I can tell you, over the years, I've given this process to numbers of people. Just go and sit somewhere and ask your animal to come to you. Many people don't have the grave to go to, or they don't even have to ask for a sign. But it's precious, this connection that we have to the other world. This is what we see here is, woo, it's a small part of what is. And it's really joyous when we can join together in community like this and support each other in our fears. It's the fear of the collective, of the unknown, fear of the dark, you know, all of this stuff. And I had the good fortune with my dad, Roland and I were, and Mom, we kept them at home, and it was in a senior center where they had an apartment, and so the doctor could come in anytime. And we were there for the last 3 weeks, you know, looking after him. And in the last hours, when he no longer could have water, it was just the last little bit, we had been putting morphine patches on him to reduce the discomfort, and they weren't working anymore. And he was spitting up, like this phlegm was just coming up. And he'd ask me to hold a so precious, hold a Kleenex, and he could spit into it, and I'd throw it away. And then 30 seconds later, we did this thing. We just kept doing it and having that opportunity to be there for him. And then it no longer, you know, we called for help, a medical help, and they came in and put a butterfly needle into him so that we could give the morphine as he needed it, and the patch wasn't holding. And we were there for his last breath. And then Roland and I sent Mom and my sister to bed, and we had the great honor of washing him and bathing him and dressing him and putting a flower lay on him. And one of my doctor friends said, just get gas ice, whatever you call it, put it under him. And so we'll keep him cool. And he passed at 2 a.m. and all day his friends came in and sat with him, had a chance to say goodbye. And we took a family picture, and like, we're smiling. And others like, so you can't show that picture. Why are you smiling when your dad's dead? What a way to go with the whole family there. And so what I'd like to say to you, even if you didn't have the chance, because we weren't there for my mom when she passed alone, which she just wanted out of there, man. She was onward. But we can still talk to them. And taking that journal and going and asking for a sign, butterfly may come too. It's really interesting. Or the bird, or just that knowing that Eleanor's mom talks about. The feeling, it's there. It's always there for us. And this is a precious part. I mean, we act like there's no death. It's so amazing, isn't it? And yet if we can celebrate this, if we can celebrate with and practice gratitude, in every opportunity and forgive ourselves when we feel, you know, anger or fear. Remember, anger comes from a place of fear, a cry for help when we're with our loved ones and we feel helpless. Forgive ourselves, forgive them. It's a really incredible opportunity to be in this community. And Eleanor, what's our, do we have a break time? Yes, we're a break time. And when we come back, what I want to do is now focus on all the uses of the T-Touch and this beautiful mind map that we made of the various touches, knowing that we're bringing the nature, that deficit of nature. We have this name, giving names to the different parts of our hands for the touches and acknowledging those different parts and the spirit of the animals as we reach out and we touch the parts of our own bodies is really precious. And this is where I'm going to ask Anka to come in and tell what happened with her father, because he fell down, 82, he's my age, he fell down stone stairs. And she was able to help him with T-Touch. That in most cases with that, you're not, you know, you're told don't touch people when that happens. So it's a really miracle story and typical of what we do with T-Touch. So we're going to really focus on how we talk to the self with the various touches in the next time together. So Sandy, do we take 10? Is that?
Yes, let's take 10 minutes. So it's 8 after, so we'll come back at 18 after.